Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 23. Yatambasa prachalata taravopi chalaiva chakshusha brahma yamenena Rishite chalativabhu yata just as ambasa by water prachalata moving tarava the trees on the bank of the river api also, chala, moving, eva, as if, chakshusha, by the eye, brahmyamanena, moving, drishyate, is seen, chalati, moving, eva, as if, bhu, the ground. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of the movements of the water, the trees on the bank of a river, when reflected on the water, seem to move. Similarly, when the eyes move because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. Purport. Sometimes, because of mental derangement, the land appears to be moving. A drunkard, for example, person with heart disease sometimes feels that the land is moving. Similarly, the reflections of trees in a flowing river also appear to move. These are the actions of Maya. Actually, the living entity does not move. Stanor achalyam. The living entity does not take birth or accept death. But because of the transient, subtle, and gross bodies, the living entity appears to move from one place to another or to be dead and gone forever. As the great Bengali Vaishnava poet Jagannanda Pandit has said, Pishachi paile yena mati chana hai maya grasta jivere haya se bhava udai. According to this statement from the Premavarta, when the living entity is conditioned by material nature, he is exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. One should therefore understand the fixed position of the spirit soul and how he is carried away by the waves of material nature to different bodies in different situations under lamentation and hankering. One achieves the success of life when he understands the constitutional position of his self and is undisturbed by the conditions created by material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Translation again. Because of the movements of the water, the trees on the bank of a river reflected on the water seem to move. Similarly, when the eyes move, because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was asking Arjuna. Actually, Krishna was telling Arjuna, Shreyan svadamo viguna para dharma sunustitat shrey dharma nidhanam shreyak para dharma vayavaha. Shreya means better. Svadamo is better to do one's own duty, viguna, although it may be faulty. Shreyak svadamo viguna para dharma. Someone else's duty. Svanustita, even though performed perfectly. In other words, it's better to perform one's own duty even perfectly than perform someone else's duty, even though it may be performed perfectly. Shreya svadamo viguna para dharma svanustita. Shreya dharma nidhanam shreya. Destruction, the cost of one's own duty, is better because to follow someone else's duty is dangerous. Now, Shreyakswadamo Viguna Paradharma Sunustitak Sve Dharame Nidanam Shreyak Paradharmo Bhayavaha. Bhayavaha is fearful. Now, Krishna put this verse in there twice in Bhagavad Gita, because the possibility of getting out of our illusion is to follow our duty. Duty means jaga vai Vishnu, to sacrifice for Vishnu. Everyone is able to become consistent in sacrifice for Vishnu, then gradually one's illusory consciousness goes away. Now, Arjuna is asking, why are people not steady in doing what they're supposed to do? First of all, people don't even know in this age, pravitim ja, nivritim ja, jana, navidur, asura. Those who are demons, they don't accept scripture. They don't accept that there's a God. They don't accept that there's a duty. And therefore, they can only accept illusion, because Krishna says, or Arjuna says, Atakeno priyukto yam papam charati purusha anichchanapi varchneya balad eva niyojita. Now, I'd like to do my duty. I would like to do what I'm supposed to do, but I seem to be impelled by something else. I want to chant my rounds, but my eyes close, and I go into Never Never Land. So, how is that? Who's doing it? What's being forced? Is it my mother's fault? What's the problem? So Arjuna is inquisitive. He knows he should be fighting in this battlefield, but he's reluctant. He was in tears. He dropped his bow, Gandiva, which he said he'd never drop. He sat down in the chariot. He was like, get me out of here. What's causing this? So Krishna says, Atad keyo priyuktoyam papam charati purusham anicham api varchanaya blood even yojita. So Krishna says, Kam esha krod esha rajaguna samudvava mahashana mahapapma vidyan anam iha varina. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world and later transformed into wrath. Or we should say, it is lust only, Arjuna, the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world, which is later transformed into wrath. In other words, there's only two types of consciousness in the material world. Material consciousness, hankering for what we don't have and lamenting over what we've lost. So one is called lust, the other is called anger. And they have different transformations, kama, krodha, lobha, mana, moha, matsara, different transformations, but they're just different transformations on the same idea. That I want, as Krishna says, Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata sarva bhutani samoham sargeyanti parantapa. That all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. So what is this desire? We want to become Krishna. Now, of course, most of us are not aspiring to take over the whole cosmic creation for beginners, because you'd have to take over all the cosmic creations, which is a little beyond our capacity. So we're not aspiring to be that Krishna. We just want to be a little Krishna, a little enjoyer. Krishna has his Vaikuntha, and we have our house. Our house is our Vaikuntha. And Krishna has his goddesses of fortune, and I have my wife. Or the wife has her, I have my Lakshmi, and the wife has her two-handed Narayan. Krishna has his expansions, and we have our children. Plenary expansions and partial expansions. The intelligent children, they're plenary. The less intelligent are partial. We have our Garuda. It's parked outside. And in that way, gradually I'm expanding. So much is mine today. Idam te na paskaya. No. Imam te na. Was it idam? Was that? idam imam idam manoritam idam astiam apime bhavishyati purardhanam adyo maya kitakshatra hanishe chaparanapi ishvaraham aham bhogi siraham balavan suki. Imam, what's the first word for the idam or imam? Idam te nadba. Idam maya idam adya maya labdvam. Imam prapse manoritam. Idam astiam apime bhavishyati purardhanam. So today, so much that I have today. Idam adya maya labdva. So much have I gained today. Of course, no one here is gaining very much today. The demoniac spirit is decreasing because people, the only thing they're gaining is wasting time sitting at home trying to figure out what to do with their kingdom. So much have I gained today, and I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine, and I'll get more and more in the future. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And all my other enemies will be killed. So we're gaining, and we're killing, we're destroying. All motifs of hankering, lamentation. But ultimately we're hankering to become Krishna and lamenting that my wife doesn't surrender to me. Even my dog growls at me sometimes. No one surrenders to me. What kind of God am I? Instead, I'm getting so many problems. Trying so hard to be happy, to get some happiness out of the material world. And all I'm getting is problems. So, lamenting. Oh, I tried so hard to become God. And we're disappointed. I'm not making very much progress. Although it's advertised, if I hold my breath for 6 months, I'll become God. I'm 3.5 months into the process, and I'm still not God. When is it going to happen? So that's material existence. Everyone's hankering to become Krishna and lamenting the fact that they can't become Krishna. So, ye shamandikatam papam, jananam punya karmanam, there's a process of realizing our eternal nature, our eternal relation with Krishna. Yesham antikatam papa. One, those who have acted piously in previous lives and this life, who've given up sinful reactions, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So there's a process called devotional service, and one can actually get free from this misconceptions that we're moving when the body is moving, that we are the body, and that the body is us, and whatever happens to the body is happening to us. To discover who we actually are within this body. But Prabhupada writes, there are four classes of people who never want to find out who they actually are. The mudhas, the diskritinas, the naradamas, the naradamas, the mayapritiganas, and the asrambhavam ashrityas. These people want to be more involved in the material world rather than less involved in the material world. And Prabhupada summarizes them in the English language as the fools, the sinful, the deceitful, and the atheistic. They never want to get out of the material entanglement. They want to make arrangements to become more entangled and to entangle everyone else. But those who want to follow the process, there's a gradual process. Control the senses. Four regular principles. Follow religious principles. Mercy, truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity. Give up meat eating, intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. Then you become religious. And if you give up the negative, you can accept pious activities, which is, in this age, is chanting Hare Krishna. And by doing that, you can conquer sinful reactions. You can remain not impelled by the forces of material nature to do whatever they're dictating, but instead to have a plan how to serve Krishna, what to do to serve Krishna. To come under the control of the super soul rather than the agitated mind, which is agitating us to do so many things in the material world. Then one comes under the control of the super soul. Titatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita shitoshna sukadukeshu tatamana pamaniyo. For one who has conquered the mind, it is the best of friends. And for one who hasn't conquered the mind, it's the greatest of enemies. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a person, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. So, tolerate, and not only just sit there and tolerate, but find out what Krishna wants one to do, and then rise up to the platform of devotional service, to do things for Krishna, to please Krishna. Then one can meditate in trance upon the personality of Godhead, and at the end one becomes completely attached to Krishna. One can meditate in trance, meditate in trance upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accept devotional service, get clear knowledge of the personality of Godhead, and then meditate in trance upon the personality of Godhead. So this is the process of getting free from the dualities that cause us to believe that we're this body. When we act according to the dualities, when we hanker, when we accept hankerings and lamentations, oh, if only things were different, then I would be happy. So we hanker to get something and then we get it. If only I didn't get this, I would have been happy. Before the feast, I can't wait for the feast, then I'll be happy during the feast. And after the feast, oh, I ate too much. If only there wasn't a feast, I would be happy. I was doing so well before. So this hankering for what we don't have, that, yeah, probably used that when Sri Takirti Prabhu was his personal servant, Prabhupada told him, don't go into the kitchen. There's danger in the kitchen. So usually when someone gets instruction, don't do something, that's the first thing they want to find out. Well, why did they tell me not to do it? Let me see what's in there. Just take a little peek. And then he met the goddess of fortune and he fell in love. And he couldn't be Prabhupada's servant. And he came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, I'm so sorry, you know, I didn't follow your instructions. I took a peek in the kitchen and there she was and I couldn't give her up. And Prabhupada said, yes, the same thing, you know, just like before the feast when it's hankering, I can't wait for the feast. And then after the feast is over, oh, I ate too much. I wish there was no feast. So this is called hankering lamentation. In the material existence, everyone is hankering to become Krishna in some way or another and lamenting the fact that we can't quite become exactly like Krishna. So we hanker in a little way, and some people with more pious credit, they hanker in a big way. They control the world or the universe, whatever, and at the end they have to lament also, especially when they have to give it up. But in any case, they just go on to another situation where they get the chance to hanker in that position and lament, watch the material nature arrange itself by Krishna's arrangements, by the arrangement of the material nature, hanker for another arrangement and lament that the arrangement wasn't quite what they wanted, and then go on to another one and another one. All the same, the soul is not changing, simply desiring different material situations. Uselessly, endlessly, because nothing ever, no material arrangement, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punarvarta Nojana Mamupetya Tukonteya Punarjanman Vidyate. From the highest planet down to the lowest, there are all places of misery when repeated birth and death take place. The one who attains the Maya Bodha, son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna, you're not your body. And then he says, now there's something practical you can do, not being your body. Tolerate. Learn tolerance. Don't get caught up in whatever the body and mind tell you to do under the spell of the false ego. Accept that that's your position as their eternal servant. Kamadi nam katida katida palitas durni deshas te shammayi jata na karuna na upashanti. That in so many different ways, we're following the dictation of our minds, and our false ego is telling us we must do it. We have no choice. But the devotee says, well, my mind is telling me to do these things, and I'm accepting it because I'm under the spell of the false ego. But whatever I do, it never satisfies me. And there's no end to it. There's no end. One day I check off all the things I was supposed to do. The next day I have twice as many things to do. I become expert at simply checking things off. And they're never merciful to me. Whatever misery and pain they put me into, they don't, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I won't put you into that again. No, they say, no, you must do it again. You suffered yesterday because you did this, but you must do it again. It suffered today. This is what you're here for. They're never merciful. Nor do I ever think I did anything wrong. If someone tells me I did something wrong, the only thing that's wrong is they're wrong. The only defect I have is I don't have a defect. Otherwise, I'm completely perfect. One has to learn to tolerate these misconceptions, these conceptions coming out of the false ego that cause us to think that we're something other than Krishna's servant. And if we accept our position as Krishna's servant, and then you desire to fulfill Krishna's desires under the direction of his representatives, then the result is we become just as free as Krishna is, even within the body. We're no longer bound up by the illusions caused by illusory energy. We become free to go wherever we want to in terms of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we're bound up to stay in this temporary, illusory, floating material existence where everyone is bound up by happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold, and there's no end to it. Simply birth after birth, finding oneself either elated or frustrated, one after another. Therefore, naiva kinchit karom iti yuktamanite tatvavit. Pashan srinvan srishan jigran ashnanga chansvapan svasvan. Pralapan vishijan grinan umishani mishanapi. Inriyarandiyarate shuvartante didaryan. Person, the divine consciousness, will engage in hearing and seeing and smelling. Always knows within, while breathing. Always knows and sleeping. Always knows within himself he does nothing at all. Because while speaking and evacuating and opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Or what is that other verse? What's the first word of that other verse? In the 14th chapter, that, let's see, what would be, the first one would be illusion. One who does not hate illusion, or, what's that? Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava nivritti sampravishtanti nirvritani kangshiti udasinadvar asi no gunanava vichalyate gunavartanti ityevam yovatishtati nengate samadukha sukhasvasta samalostrasmakangshana tulya priya priyo diras tulya matras ripankshayo savarambha prityagi gurakti taksa uchite. Person who is not elated when there is illumination, prakasham cha, pravrittim cha, or attachment, moham eva cha pandava, or when he, illusion, he doesn't hanker for these things, nor is he depressed when they appear, remains aloof, knowing that only the three modes of material nature are active, and that he's actually aloof from all these things. When he looks upon a pebble, stone, and gold, all with an equal mind, who looks equally upon friends and enemies, the indifferent and partial, etc., that he's said to have transcended the three modes of material nature, equanimity. And how does one do that? Guess what? Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who's engaged in unalloyed devotional service, unfailing in all circumstance, at once transcends the three modes of material nature, and he comes to the level of Brahman. In other words, steady engagement in devotional service, nishtha, will bring us to Brahman realization. And then there's no more hankering, there's no more lamentation, there's no more anxiety, there's no more fear. One becomes prasannatma, one becomes joyful. The more we come to that platform, the more our life becomes actually successful. Otherwise, people, shrama, eva, hi kevalam, people are wasting their time trying to gain things in the material world and then suffering them in lamentation of losing them, at least at the time of death. Rityu sarvaharashaham. Krishna comes at the time of death and snatches everything away, and you're left with only the sinful reactions that you acquired for gaining all these things illegally. One day you're a multi-billionaire, next day you're a worm in stool. How did I get here? Well, it's not so bad. Make the best use of a bad bargain. Food's free, it's warm. Don't have to pay rent. Enough room for my whole family. Not so bad. All right, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna. I'm often puzzled by this verse, Kama Esha Krodha Esha, which Krishna speaks in reply to Arjuna's question, what pushes us to act wrongly. Because Arjuna doesn't seem to be in the grips of lust. He's in fact famous for being able to withstand strong temptations, even in the heaven by the heavenly Urvashi. And he's in the battlefield. I guess lust is the last thing on his mind. And he's eager to spare lives of all the people there. So why would Krishna bring up lust and anger?
Because it's all due to lust, that's why. Just like Prabhupada said, in the forest, there are tigers and there are deer. So one of them is a very ferocious animal and the other was a very gentle and meek animal. But they're both animals. So lust can manifest itself, or anger, in a way that's very unpleasant on the outsider, and lust can manifest in a way that's actually seems to be quite commendable. So Arjuna was put into illusion by Krishna, and Daivyesha Gunamaya Mama Maya Dharatya. Krishna's energies, the illusory energy is Krishna's energy, and it's very practically impossible to overcome it. Only if one takes shelter of Krishna. But if Krishna puts you in illusion, then you're an illusion. So Arjuna was an illusion to fulfill Krishna's purpose, of course. And there he became affected by the bodily concept of life. And that's praiseworthy. But that's all due to Numena Vriyateva Nira, seeing everyone from a material point of view. That's caused by lust. Of course, and lust comes into greed, it comes into anger, and then the flavor of lust, anger, and greed is delusion. When you smell lust, anger, and greed, it comes out, you get affected by delusion. So his delusion is what? He was his body, they're their bodies, he didn't want to kill them. So that way he was affected by lust, anger, greed, illusion, forgetfulness. He forgot. His mind was reeling, he lost his intelligence.
I have another question by a somewhat enigmatic phenomenon which is brought up from time to time. It seems that in South Korea, in Japan, there is a sizable section of between 20% and 40% of young people who have never entered into a sexual relationship and have no plans to ever enter into any sexual relationship. and they consider it somewhat of a problem because of the aging populations, both in South Korea and in Japan. So that seems somewhat strange for the material world, for the people to be so aloof from that urge. If that's
well,
natural.
I don't know how accurate these statistics are. I mean, I was in Japan one time, and on the train, you could see everyone was reading a comic book. They have these thick comic books that they're in. And they're not full of Krishna conscious literature. So lust, anger, greed are there. Even sexual energy may come out in terms of having a family, or it just may come out in a different way. But the whole atmosphere there is not one of piety and purity. It's one of intense lust. But they just don't want to take the responsibility, that's all. They don't want to get married because then they have to, you know, take the responsibility. So they different ways they manifest their material desires. Yes.
So this question also relates to yesterday and today's lecture. We were discussing with my sister, and the point came up how if all that we can do in this material world is choose our desires, what about if we actually don't know what our desires are, that we have some desires that we're not aware of?
Well, look
apparently.
In the mirror. Look in the mirror, you'll see your desires. You see the manifestation of your desire, your previous desires. You just have to look in the mirror. Or, as I said, sit down during japa with a piece of paper and a pen and write down whatever you're thinking. And you'll see there's a few desires here and there come out. Does that answer your question, or is it? So, most of the time people, they don't notice their desire because they're so much absorbed in trying to fulfill them. Their whole existence is fulfilling their desires. They don't even know that that's what they're doing, is fulfilling desires. Because mostly the more one becomes involved in fulfilling desires, then the more one loses one's discrimination. And therefore one becomes simply conditioned reflex, as they say, in terms of experimental psychology. The stimuli is there, and one fulfills, as soon as the stimuli is there, the reflex, conditioned reflex is there. But one takes that as oneself doing it, rather than being forced to do it by the material nature. Only when when the stimuli is there and we sit back and decide how to appropriately react to that stimuli, do we actually gain the intelligence to see that it's my desire, that's my misuse of my desire, that's caused me to overreact to stimuli. And now I can take control of my desires and find out what's the actual appropriate way of desiring under these circumstances. That's called Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Thank you very much. Krandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.